Hey, everybody. It's the Charlie Kirk Show, a firsthand account of what happened when the Afghanistan withdrawal fell apart, saving Aziz. And then we have Pastor James Cadiz, who talks about the World Economic Forum and globalism from a biblical perspective. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. The Afghan withdrawal was one of the great blunders of American foreign policy, but there were so many stories of heroism and courage that emerged from the chaos. And joining us now is someone who wrote a book about it calling Saving Aziz. I apologize if I didn't pronounce that correctly. Chad Robichaux is with us now. Chad, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me on, Kirk.
Thank you. Walk us through your book and your story of that eventful moment or moments that happened in the summer of 2021.
Yeah, well, Saving Aziz is the book. It's a story about me and my interpreter, my friend Aziz, and my heart to go get him. And ultimately, that resulted in us saving 17,000 people. My time in Afghanistan began in 2003. I had already been in 10 years, and I was fortunate to be a Marine, and I was very fortunate to be part of what's called the JSOC Task Force, Joint Special Operations Command Task Force, where I served as AFO. And that job is kind of unique, especially when it comes to interpreter, because I worked in a singleton capacity, meaning I worked alone to go out ahead of my unit to build the clandestine infrastructure to get our soldiers on target to capture or kill bad guys. And so my teammate, my partner, my interpreter was Aziz. And Aziz and I spent weeks, months in those mountains. And for continuity purposes, we did all 8 of my deployments together. And you know, you can imagine driving in a car with someone for a 10-hour car ride, how much you're going to get to know them. You're either going to love them or hate them. Well, you know, me and Aziz really just clicked. We connected. He was an incredible human being, understood freedom and democracy in a way that I don't think most Americans even understand it and had never even seen it before. And he wanted it for his country. He wanted it for his daughters and his family. And so he was willing to fight for it. And he's one of the good guys in the world. I mean, he's an incredible human being. Saved my life on 3 occasions and probably saved my life every day. Like, don't walk there. Don't eat that. Don't talk to that person. Mm-hmm. And so, and by the way, when I went back to when we were not operating, I didn't go back to base and he went home. I went to his home. The first warm meal that I got coming out of those mountains was made by his wife, Hatra. And I was there when his oldest son, Mashud, and Mashud and I were born. I held them as babies. So he's family to me. And so when this withdrawal was announced by President Biden, a couple of things that I really struggle with as a veteran was, one, I didn't agree with the withdrawal at all. And I think the American people were sold a lie to be told that we were in this 20-year war, this endless war, and that just wasn't true. In 2018, we had switched to from a conventional kinetic war with Afghanistan to support an advisory role of the Afghan National Army and Afghan National Police at Bagram Air Force Base, which is the most strategic place in the globe between Iraq, Iran, Russia, and China. And so we were participating in this effort with the entire international community, and that Afghan National Army was fighting the Taliban and keeping them at bay in those mountains of Afghanistan, and the world was a safer place for it, and it worked. And consistently throughout history, we don't leave war zones just abruptly or in totality. We typically leave a contingent force. We still have 80,000 troops in Japan and 40,000 in Germany and 35,000 in South Korea. And that, you know, keeps the world a safer place by having those strategic contingencies. And giving up Bagram Air Force Base was something that we didn't negotiate with our international partners. We didn't negotiate with the Afghan government that we spent 20 years putting in place. The White House only consulted with the Taliban, our enemy of 20 years. I knew it was going to be catastrophic. But, you know, there's only so many things I could do. I couldn't change that. But one thing I could change was to make sure my friend wasn't left behind. And I made a decision to go in and get Aziz, his wife, and his 6 kids. And ultimately, we ended up getting another 17,000 people.
Yeah, well, we're certainly not going to agree on the Afghanistan issue. I think that
I didn't think we would.
Yeah. But let's focus on the heroism of the moment and kind of the blunder that was the withdrawal. So explain your book and kind of just build out how chaotic that was, because I'm sure we both can agree that the withdrawal itself was a complete catastrophe in more ways than one. So give us your firsthand account of that, and also the courage and the sense of loyalty you had and duty to Aziz. I mean, you very well could have just said, yeah, see you later, man. But you had a sense of duty to him. I think that's really admirable.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my wife has a husband and my kids have a father because of him. And you know, that's the least I could do. But as we're planning to go get Aziz, we have a group of 12 special operations veterans, very experienced group of people from the Green Berets, the SEALs, and 4th Recon Marines, and CIA paramilitary officers, and a very experienced group. And we realized, hey, we can just save this family, or we can help as many Americans and interpreters and vulnerable people groups. And we made a decision to move forward and do that. And I believe we witnessed a miracle as a series of events happened in about 3 days that allowed us the ability to actually pull this off. One of which was the Joint Chiefs allowed us as civilians to go into the airport and conduct those evacuations, which is pretty much an impossibility. And secondly, was the United Arab Emirates allowed us to bring those people to the humanitarian center in UAE, which is incredible as well, because you can't move people without a visa from one country to the next, only in Laredo, Texas. But in the real world, you have to have permissions and visas to move people or bring them to the humanitarian center. So we had the access to do that. The royal family gave us a C-17 plane. Glenn Beck called and said he raised a bunch of money through Mercury One Charities and needed a place to put it. And we partnered with him to handle the cost of chartering aircraft. All those things happened in like 3 days. And we went in and spent 10 days at that airport. We didn't know how much time we had. We spent 10 days at the airport doing evacuations. And, you know, you asked how chaotic it was there. Hundreds of thousands of people swarmed at an airport. The United States government withdrew our troops off of and gave up Bagram Air Force Base, which would have been the ideal place for evacuations and to preserve our equipment. It's a secured base. It's been secure for 20 years. It is a airstrip, a bigger airstrip than HKIA. And we gave up that base before we moved out civilians, before we moved out our allies, and before we moved out our $85 billion in military equipment. So that created just such chaos. And then the White House gave the NEO operation, which is a non-combatant evacuation operation, away from the Department of Defense and gave it to the State Department, who does not know how to do that. And it's not their job to do that. And that created a situation to where the HKIA airport became a scenario was treated like an embassy, and the military was only allowed to guard the airport and not conduct evacuations. And so it created a scenario where there was just mass chaos. Tens of thousands of people swarming that airport. Many people seen on the news, people hanging on airplanes, so desperate. What a lot of people didn't see was women kissing their babies goodbye, putting them on top of crowds and crowd surfing them to that fence, throwing them over that fence and to never be seen again, not knowing that there was 6 feet high and 20 feet deep of Constantino wire on the other side. My buddy Joe counted six babies that had bled out in that Constantino wire. Just the level of desperation created a major security issue. And then the Taliban controlled the outer perimeter, which controlled who went in and out of the airport. The only people that went in and out of the airport was the people that the Taliban allowed. So when you had the White House saying, if Americans want to leave, all they have to do is go to the airport. I don't think that's naive. I believe that was intentionally misleading the American people, that Americans could not get to that airport because we didn't have a proper evacuation strategy. Americans were watching people get their blue passports taken from them, beaten, people being killed at those checkpoints. I would not blame any American for not wanting to go up to a Taliban with an AK-47 on his shoulder and show them their blue passport. And you know, after 10 days and we just kept moving people out, the Abbey Gate blew up and was blown up, and 13 of our service members were killed. And in that moment, the military welded those gates shut, and we had we didn't know at the time, but we had evacuated 12,000 people. And just so people have a little bit of peace of mind of who we got out, the people we got out had to be manifested and vetted. So we were taking out people with SIV visa applications, P1, P2 visas, or orphan groups. And those are people that the Joint Chiefs allowed us to move out. And then we didn't bring them to the United States. We brought them to Abu Dhabi and Albania, where the State Department could finish vetting them. So we didn't actually move people out to the United States. We were just getting them out of Afghanistan. And I think, just so you know as well, I was equally concerned and am equally concerned with the amount of people brought to the United States, directly to the United States on planes, mostly men, that we didn't know who they were, and they were released right into the public, and that should be a concern, and I share in that concern.
Yeah. Well, your heroism is clear, and I mean, I said at the time, this feels malevolent and intentional. I'm not going to ask you. I could ask you your opinion on that, but the reality.
I'll definitely answer that.
Yeah, it just the result was one of the great humiliations internationally in American history. Hey everybody, Charlie Kirk here. This new year, you've got goals, and Factor is here to help you achieve each and every one of them. Save time and have the energy you need to tackle everything on your to-do list with Factor's ready-to-eat meal straight to your door. Get Factor and not only skip the trip to the grocery store, but skip the chopping, prepping, and cleaning up too. No matter what your lifestyle is, Factor has the meals to help you live life to its fullest with keto, calorie smart, vegan, plus veggie, protein plus meals on the menu every week. With 34 chef-prepared, dietitian-approved weekly options, there's always something new to try. Eating vegan or veggie is a snap with Factor because each meal is prepared with chefs and approved dietitians. Get Factor and enjoy clean eating without the hassle. Simply choose your meals and enjoy the fresh, flavor-packed meals delivered to your door. Ready in 2 minutes, there is no easier way to eat well. Head to factor75.com/charlie60 and use code charlie60 and get 60% off your first box. That's code charlie60 at factor75.com/charlie60. So, Chad, do you think that the withdrawal and that blunder that was a humiliation and was a tragedy, do you think it was intentionally so? Or do you think that they, being the bureaucrats and the woke generals, underestimated that the Taliban would retake as much ground as they did?
No, you know, unfortunately, and it's not popular for me to say this, but the truth is, I just got to be honest. I don't know that how this could have been a mistake. We use the word blunder a lot. We use the word botched a lot, but I don't think our joint chiefs, and I don't think our leaders of our intelligence communities, are that incompetent. I think they knew exactly what they were getting to do. They advised the president not to do this, but they went along with it anyways. And these types of decisions that were made were not accidental. They were not mistakes. No one tripped over their shoelaces. This was a hasty withdrawal. It started from the beginning, from the president and the White House negotiating with the Taliban and not with the Afghan government, not with our international partners, to give up Bagram Air Force Base, which is the most strategic base on the globe. Between Iraq, Iran, Russia, and China, you don't just give that away to our enemies. Because then you have to look at who's going to benefit from us leaving. Not America, not Afghanistan, and the 40 million citizens and the 20 million women that are going to be sexually enslaved. Who benefited was China, who wanted to hit federal rights in the Hindu Kush, the lithium there, trillions of dollars worth of lithium in those mountains. They wanted access to sanctioned Iranian oil, which they cannot get to because the U.S. military in Afghanistan, so needed the U.S. military out so China could have access to that Iranian oil. Iran wanted to get that oil there. Iran wanted, and China both want that strategic location in the world. And then Pakistan ISI, Pakistan intelligence, they wanted that everyone wants Afghanistan. They have for thousands of years. They wanted to be there. And we know that the Taliban 2.0, which is not the friendly Taliban, they're just the ISI trained, Pakistan intelligence trained Taliban, want them to be able to govern that country. So this was a mistake from the beginning. And then the White House gives a date, which is, anybody knows anything about negotiations, you never give a date, you give terms. And while I'm not a fan of the withdrawal, I do believe if you are going to withdraw, you don't give a date. What you need to say is, we will leave when we get every American citizen out, when we get all of our allies that we want to get out, and when we get the country turned over, and when we get our $85 billion worth of equipment out, that's when we'll leave. And if you interfere, we're not going to leave. You're going to prolong it. He didn't do that. And then when he wanted more time, he asked for more time from the Taliban, and the Taliban said no, and they caved to it. And so those were all mistakes. But what I think one of the biggest mistakes was that they took away the power of the Department of Defense to manage this negotiation, because people in the DOD, leaders in DOD did not agree with the White House's methodology and would not go along with what the White House wanted to do. So the White House took away the NEO operation, the non-combatant evacuation operation, away from the Department of Defense and gave it to the State Department so that the White House could have more control of what happened during the withdrawal. And it was catastrophic, and it cost American lives, and it left American citizens stranded behind. And I believe
the American 13 dead Marines, right?
13 dead service members.
Yep, totally unnecessarily. So, Chad, remind our audience the name of the book. And then finally, how is Aziz doing today?
Well, the book is named Saving Aziz, and Aziz is here in Texas. He's got his cowboy boots and cowboy hat, and he's a proud Texan, and he's doing amazing. His wife and six kids are doing great here in Texas and getting started with their new life. And Texas has been very welcoming to them. They got a warm welcome everywhere they've been. They're amazing human beings, and I can't think of anyone more deserving than them to be able to be here.
Well, Chad, thank you so much for joining us. Everyone should check out the book Saving Aziz. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Charlie.
Thanks. Charlie Kirk here. Look, I've told you about producer Andrew and how Relief Factor has really improved his life and relieved the pain in his knees and back. Now, let me tell you about Yvonne in California. She says this, quote, "Both my husband and I are in our 70s and so grateful to have found Relief Factor. We tried so many other solutions, but none of them have given us the freedom from aches and pains like Relief Factor." I hear you, Yvonne. Relief Factor works for me too. Relief Factor is a 100% drug-free solution developed by doctors based on scientific research to help your body attack the underlying inflammation causing you pain. 3 weeks from now, you could be doing the things you enjoy doing. Your first step to becoming pain-free could be just to order the 3-week quick start for only $19.95. After trying Relief Factor, over 500,000 people have gone on to order more. Go to relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF to find out more about this offer. That's relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF. Live your best life and feel the difference with Relief Factor. Joining us now is a dear friend of mine, Pastor James Cadiz, who is one of the clearest communicators and thinkers about the globalist issue from a spiritual approach. James, welcome back to the program. James, I want to start our conversation with something that Davos said, and we'll tee off our conversation perfectly, and then you could let it rip. They're saying that this is a spiritual battle. Let's play cut 62.
And also, our faith leaders, they know that this crisis is much more than physical and environmental schisms. We have a deeply wounded spirit as a people that is in desperate need of healing and restoration. And we must look to our almighty creator to find our proper place in humanity.
I agree with her, but I don't know if she sees the world the way we do. James, let it rip.
Well, Charlie, first of all, it's a mixed message. And I just want to say how absolutely blessed I am to be here with you. Obviously, goes without saying, you're a very dear brother and a great example of what we should be doing as believers and, of course, as Americans. And I think it's important to note that these people are truly building the modern day Tower of Babel. I think it was remarkable that you played a video at the very beginning of your broadcast on Monday showing Yuval Harari basically saying we will attain what is in essence better than God. And what don't realize is when that video came out, that was him sitting in a church on September the 5th, 2016.
Wow.
And he goes and he continues to maintain that same type of rhetoric within the context of the World Economic Forum. And what people don't recognize is they know beyond a shadow of a doubt that they must remove the consciousness of God from the people that they choose to rule over and the people that they choose into deceiving into thinking that they're doing the right thing. And the only way that they can effectively remove consciousness of God in that situation is by appealing to the weakness of man's flesh in actually taking on the same mindset that Satan took on, which was, I will be like the Most High God. So the context behind the trans movement, particularly the transhumanist movement and all the other trans movements, they are driven to cause people to take the place of God, thus removing themselves of any kind of conviction, removing themselves of any kind of inclination to respond under any context that is delegated or relegated or controlled by the spirit of God living in man. And that's exactly what's going on with the World Economic Forum. They are indeed building the Tower of Babel. And Charlie, I got to point this out because this is something that a lot of people aren't talking about. You're definitely talking about this. They came in at the very beginning of the discussion, which they've been talking about this now for years, and they introduced a new word, polycrisis. And they're saying that there's a series of multiple different crises going on all at the same time. And then when they get into the second and third day of Davos, they begin to say, we need to let the crisis expand. They're calling it deglobalization. And the reason why is because they're recognizing the patterns and the ebbs and flows of what happens when globalist mechanisms become more deployed in a society, how the absence of the nationalistic approach means the absence of accountability. And when globalism begins to expand, you bring yourself into the models that we read about in the book of Revelation. You have totalitarian rule. As a result of totalitarian rule, you have war. As a result of war, you have economic collapse. And then you have death. And we see this happening on a micro level all over throughout the tenure of human history. And that's what they're doing. And they want to accelerate what they're calling deglobalization in order to implement globalization, which is something that comes straight out of Satan's plan book. The Bible shows us that pattern in human nature. And the whole idea behind us allowing the Overton window to be pushed in that context is highly destructive. And it's happening right now on levels that people can't even begin to imagine.
I want to play cut 19. It's a brilliant point. Play cut 19, as you say, Yuval Harari, we need to turn human beings into God. No longer should we have the distinction between the divine and man. Man will ascend to be the divine. Play cut 19.
The next big projects of humankind will be to overcome old age and death, to find the keys, the secret to happiness, and to basically upgrade humans into gods. And I don't mean it as a kind of literary metaphor. I mean it in the literal sense.
The literal sense, James.
Yeah, the literal sense. And understand, this is how the devil works. The Bible tells us this, right? That when there is what is real and established to be real by God in his word and in his law, there's always a counterfeit that comes into the picture. So we understand the fact that the Bible makes a very clear declaration. We can achieve eternal life, and that's done through the conduit provided for us in the finished work of Christ. Yet you have counterfeits all the time that says, no, we'll be like God. We'll achieve our own eternal life. And then what makes it even worse when you begin to examine it in that full context is they then begin to work on their concerted effort to remove the consciousness of God, thus allowing totalitarian rule to take its full course. This is how they do it. As a matter of fact, I think it's remarkable to note the fact that anytime you want a society to actually go with the program and walk away from freedom, you will remove their consciousness of God. That's how it works, because the lack of willingness to obey the word of God brings bondage. It happens on a societal level, it happens on a governmental level, and it happens on a personal level. And that is the concerted effort that the World Economic Forum is making. They know they're doing it. They recognize it. They take advantage of the largest percentage of people that are participating in the forum who think they're doing well, and they deceive them. And this goes back to the days of Margaret Sanger and so many other people who have participated in this demonically inspired secular humanistic philosophy that continues to drive it. By the way, that's the driving force behind the Hegelian dialectic. It's the driving force behind what we see in critical race theory. It is all about removing absolutes, creating a thesis with an antithesis, and seeking the enigma of the synthesis. You know what I mean? It's like trying to find the middle point. And it's Satan's very, very complex way of getting man to remove their consciousness of God, thus bringing in what we're seeing. And that's what we're actually seeing right now in the United States of America. We're watching the removal of the consciousness of God and man's desire to be pleased by the comforts of this world, thus completely walking away from the responsibilities that have been entrusted to us by God to walk in the freedom that comes from the sacrifice he made. And this is why Jews are one of the most persecuted population groups, and Christians, because they represent the values, and it's a very important thing to point out, they represent the values that completely contradict every single deployable mechanism that you see brought forth by people like the World Economic Forum.
It's well said. So a couple thoughts on that. Yes, and that's right out of the Phenomenology of Spirit by Hegel, who came up with the dialectic. So that was well described. But I find it curious, and I'd love your thoughts here, James. Yuval Harari, who basically represents a sect of secular humanism, is appropriating and using biblical stories time and time again as a way to communicate his aims and his ambitions. Now, I'm going to play another piece of tape here, but an innocent reading would say, okay, he's just using stories people are familiar with. Or a deeper reading, which I would imagine you're sympathetic with, as you said really well previously, this might be a counterfeit application of the Word of God. Let's play cut 18. It's a long clip. It's about 50 seconds long of Yuval Harari talking about how what they're going to do is similar to God creating Noah's Ark, basically foreshadowing a mass extinction event. Play cut 18.
It pushes things in its own interests, even if it doesn't benefit the vast majority of the population. This has happened so many times previously in history, and it's probably going to happen again. One of the biggest dangers to the planet today is this technological utopia, because probably for the elite, it will work. If bad comes to worse, then when the flood comes, the scientists will build a Noah's Ark for the elite, leaving the rest to drown, the rest of the people and then the rest of the ecosystem. But they are likely to be able to construct this technological Noah's Ark, which is probably what much of the elite is counting on.
What does he mean by that, James?
Okay, so let me just explain one premise here first that I have to lay down in order for people to understand this. Number one, we know this. The Bible tells us this. Whatever man seeks to worship, they will become like. So if you worship a being that you can understand, explain, something that you create, like a certain philosophy, you become more ignorant. Your intelligence quotient begins to drop. But when you worship the true and living God, the only one who is superior to all of mankind put together with all of the complexities represented, you become markedly more intelligent. That's just a fact. Now, he's bringing up the issue of Noah. And the problem is the premise he's carrying with the story of Noah's Ark is stipulated straight in his ideals of secular humanism. He says, well, there's an elite group of scientists that are going to build an ark while the rest of the world dies. Well, actually, he represents what he is condemning as the elite group of scientists, which, by the way, have a very challenged level of intelligence quotient. I'm just going to say that right now, because what people don't understand with Noah's Ark, when God judged the world by flooding it, he was actually saving the world, just like what he did with the Tower of Babel. Man, when left to its own secular humanistic philosophy, will destroy itself. That's if right. You don't believe me, go to San Francisco. Go to many
it's
of these places.
It's the snake eating itself. It's that
that's
picture.
That's exactly yeah. right. So God showed his mercy to mankind, to humankind, by destroying the world while preserving a group of people who understood that the only deployable route for increased growth, I'll use a word of the economic forum, right? Sustainable life comes from worshiping the true creator. So in doing that, that's what he did. That's why he confused languages by those people or to those people that tried to build the Tower of Babel. He was saving them. So what the premise, this is what he's trying to do. He's trying to create an argument that says, you guys that are nationalists, you're wanting to make your own ark while everybody else dies, right? And we the globalists are trying to save the world, when in reality, it's the exact opposite. The exact opposite says, no, we have an obligation to respond to God's accountability that he provides for us. I am man. I'm accountable to you, God, and I choose to remain accountable to the truth that you
That's
set forth.
Exactly right.
He's contradicting that right now.
Yeah, they want to destroy the distinction that there is a creator and that you are the creation. They want to invert that, and it bothers them, and it's at its core, it is Luciferian. Pastor James Cadiz is with us. James, before we go any further, tell people about how they can follow you on YouTube, Rumble. You do a lot of content. It's really good stuff. Tell our audience about it.
Yes, sir. Yeah, we do close to about 1,000 videos a year. We're probably going to do maybe a little bit more than that this year. You can subscribe to us at Calvary Chapel Signal Hill on our YouTube page. And it's actually a lot easier for you to just go to jamescadiz.com. That's JamesKadiz.com. And it's got links to all of our stuff. I am at James Cadiz on Instagram, and love your guys' support. We make everything available to you guys for free because we want you to be educated and we want you to grow in your knowledge of the truth. I think it's really important.
So in the quest to try to become God, they want to, and this is a complicated theological issue, but James, you and I are sympathetic that we do believe we have some form of agency. Other people disagree. So, but they, Yuval Harari says that human beings, we need to get rid of this idea of free will, right?
Yeah.
This, he's saying this. I do believe in free will, and so do you, to some extent, right, that we do have some agency. Play cut 97.
Humans are now hackable animals. You know, the whole idea that humans have, you know, this, they have this soul or spirit and they have free will and nobody knows what's happening inside me. So whatever I choose, whether in the election or whether in the supermarket, this is my free will. That's over.
He said, yeah. It cuts off, but he says it's basically all, it's nonsense.
What's it's wicked.
What's the significance of that?
Yeah, it's evil. One of the complexities of the God that created us that we're never going to be able to fully understand is the fact that he did create us as free will agents. We do have the ability. God honors our free will. That is why God has, in his grace and mercy, throughout the tenure of human history, intervened by executing judgment in a way that has created a restraint that causes the type of safety net that we actually need. And so there will come a point in time where God won't allow that to happen. He will completely let it come into fruition and it'll take place. But it's just foolishness. I think it's funny because when he talks about humans being hackable, this is something we spent a lot of time on. I've probably done 50 to 100 videos on Yuval alone. And one of the things that he tends to do is he pursues the line of thinking that says, well, we basically need to learn how to remove humans of their emotions, and we're able to achieve something greater than God in that God made things that are organic in nature, and we are actually creating virtual reality. Well, here's the thing. Virtual reality is a reflection, or artificial intelligence is a reflection of what happened when God breathed living life into human beings. So the problem is, and I've dealt with this on, I've had debates with very well-known atheists, which always blows my mind. I've never, ever in my life met an atheist that was not angry at a God that they claimed didn't exist. But my question is, every single time, where does your sense of wrong and right come from?
Right.
Where is your consciousness? Why are you afraid of death? Why is it that you have a personality that is attributable to only you? How is it you can take a triplet and each single one, every single one of those kids will have completely different personalities, different ways of speaking, different ways of acting, because God breathed human life. And forgive me for saying this. I don't care what anybody says, but there is no way in the world we have artificial intelligence that even come close to the neurological complexities that exist within the human mind, or the simple, most basic proclamation that God makes about the differentiation between each human being found in DNA. I mean, we still to this day have never learned how to manufacture anything that is capable of being damaged, reproducing the parts it needs to putting it back together, and then putting it back together again. Our proteins in our body can do that. The complexities associated with the remarkable creation that God has put together is, you cannot even begin to touch it. And when fakes like Yuval say, well, we're going to be better than God's because we can make virtual reality. No, what you're actually saying is, I am making a concerted effort to make you notably more stupid so that you will capitulate to the totalitarian ideals that I'm going to pass on to you so that I can enjoy my life as a small minority at the expense of the death of the future. That's exactly what's being said.
James Cadiz, everybody, you should listen to his videos. They're really theologically sound and well-researched. James, God bless you, man. Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you, bro. God bless you.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.